Are you tired of trying to keep ahead in the rat race, only to have so much of your hard-earned money going to the tax collector? Equity doesn't pay the bills. Retirement savings don't pay you now, and there are only 24 hours in a day to work. The only solution is passive income that pays you 24/7 now, not 40 years from now. From vetted investment opportunities to tax-saving strategies, let John guide you through all the confusion and take control of your financial life in pursuit of financial freedom. So sit back, relax, and welcome to the Wealth and Freedom Nexus.
Have you ever wanted to invest like the wealthy and how the 1% do, but think it's out of reach for you? Do you desire a more abundant lifestyle, but think you can't afford it? If so, check out ECI Development. With over 20 years of international real estate experience, Mike Cobb and his team can help you truly diversify your portfolio and lifestyle. How about benefiting from a generational investment that can 10x your wealth or more with a teak hardwood parcel in Panama or Nicaragua? Maybe it'll even lead to residency options in the future. Perhaps you'd be interested in a beachfront condo for under $250,000, enjoying the beautiful sunsets off the Pacific Ocean. Maybe an eco-friendly tiny home for around $100,000. ECI's team can even help you get financing for these investments. To learn more, check out the show notes or go to wealthandfreedomnexus.com/ECI. Hey, welcome back to another great episode of the Wealth and Freedom Nexus podcast. This is episode number 73, coming at you March 8th of 2023, which is a very important date as it is my son's 18th month birthday. Okay, so, well, maybe outside of mom, dad, papa, and nana, might not be national news, but for myself, my wife, the 8th of each month is always going to be a date I remember. So it just kind of popped in my head as I hit record that, hey, it's my son's 18th month birthday is a year and a half old. Hard to believe that time flies. Now, as always, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe, as well as share with other like-minded individuals who want to grow and protect their wealth and freedom. Also, if you're on social media channels, be sure to look up wealthandfreedomnexus.com or WFreedomNexus. You can follow me on Twitter, my YouTube channel, as well as Instagram. Now, on a recent LinkedIn challenge with Yona Weiss, who I have dubbed as the Lord of the LinkedIn, he has also been a guest on my show twice as well. Many people were asking about my experience with investing in coffee, and many others were messaging me, direct messaging me, texting me, wait, you can invest in coffee? How do you divest in coffee? I just drink coffee. You mean buy Starbucks stock, right? That's how you invest in coffee, right? Well, since I had so many people asking about it, and I found myself repeating a lot of the same answers, like, yes, this is my been my experience. This is the company I go through. This is the gentleman that I've worked with for the last 4 years. I decided, you know, I think it might just be time to do a podcast on this. So I invited Darren Doyle of Agro Nosotros to give us an in-depth look at their coffee farms, as well as their cacao farms that they have started a little bit more recently. Cacao, more commonly known as chocolate. Company's been around since 2014. Actually, rounding about will be their 10-year anniversary here soon. Now, I myself have invested with them back in January of 2020. First heard about, shall I say, investing in coffee. I don't exactly remember when, but it was through Keith Weinhold's podcast, Get Rich Education. And actually, I think as of the time of this recording, about 2 weeks ago on the GRE podcast, he had Darren on as well, talking about many of the same topics we will be discussing. But for myself, just so you're aware, or for any of my listeners out there, this is not a cash flow from day one type of investment. This isn't a turnkey property. This isn't a trustee. This isn't, you know, any kind of other investment, like I mentioned on this show before, where you invest in either from day one or maybe, you know, 30 days out, you're getting cash flow. In fact, like I said, my wife and I invested in this January 2020. We aren't expecting to get our first returns until 2024. and really won't hit peak production or peak numbers, if you will, come 2027 or 2028. And Darren and I will go into more detail on that in this podcast. However, this is more of a legacy investment and even a generational investment. This, along with our teak farm and our citrus parcel, which you can learn about those in episodes 18 and 51, respectively. This is a long-term investment, emphasis on long-term, that I also hope to pass down to onto my son and hopefully my grandchildren as well. That's more of a legacy investment versus just kind of a, you know, fix and flip, make a quick buck type of investment that I think is pretty predominant in the news, whether it's the next crypto or next Tesla stock or whatever the case may be. So with that, here is Darren Doyle from Agro Nosotros after a word from one of our longtime sponsors of this podcast. This show is brought to you today by Lightbulb Podcasting. Are you a busy professional that needs to get more time back in their schedule? If you are a podcaster like me, you have enough on your plate. Why not outsource your podcast production? From editing, show notes, keywords, scheduling, volume balancing, and editing, and creating audiograms, podcast production is another job in and of itself. That's why I use Lightbulb Podcasting. Get phenomenal support at an affordable price while you concentrate on growing your brand. Go to www.lightbulbpodcasting.com today to schedule an introductory call. Put your content in the spotlight. Darren, thanks for coming on the show. Hopefully it's a little bit warmer and less snow where you're at than what I'm dealing with.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Definitely, I just turned on the air conditioning here. So it's quite a bit different to the weather you guys are having in the U.S.
Yeah, we don't need that, although it's a little bit balmy now. It's about 20 degrees versus negative 20 that we had a few weeks ago. Well, maybe first things, Darren, I mean, obviously I've been familiar with you and Agro Nosotros for about 4 to 5 years, and actually about 3 years ago at the time of this recording, I first invested with the company. But for any of my listeners that have maybe never heard of you, never heard about the company, and are like, you know, why in the world do I invest in coffee or chocolate? Maybe you can kind of start from the beginning of how the company started and, you know, your background with it as well.
Yeah, no problem. Stop me if I go off on too many tangents, but
no worries.
I'm, as you can tell, I don't sound very Panamanian. So I'm born and bred in Dublin, Ireland, where my family also lives now. When I was about 19, 20, got itchy feet, went traveling, lived in Australia, Europe, Southeast Asia, different places for many years. And I was working in the Middle East during the 2008 recession, the 1 year recession that lasted 4 years.
Yeah.
I was working in the Middle East and we got quite a bit of time off. So I came backpacking around Panama. That was maybe 14 years ago. And I ended up, I saw something in Panama that it had this just potential to just explode. It was growing and there was a lot of things going on. And I got to meet a fair few people that were living here that were expats. And I was traveling back and forth, different places, meeting up with them. And I remember talking to one gentleman in particular before I left. I was like, what's the trick? Every time I meet you, you're available. You don't seem to be working very hard. You're in shorts, flip flops every time I meet you. I've been in your house. I've been in your house at the beach. I know you've got a couple of cars. Like, what's going on? And it was him that explained to me that he'd been living in California before, which is where I had planned on moving to.
Okay.
Because of the lower cost of living and because he had himself structured that he didn't have to pay any tax, he had the Californian lifestyle in Panama at a fraction of the cost.
Okay.
That piqued my interest and we went away, but we kept in touch. And maybe a year or so later, he sent me an email that there was a company here that was on the investment circuit that was looking for new people to train up. And I said, okay, I'm ready for a change from the Middle East. I'll go over. Long story short, that company didn't work out really to be what they said they were going to be. But when I was there, I met my now business partner, David Sewell. So David he's 30 years older than me. So I was about 30. He was in his 60s. David was an officer in the Canadian Navy, worked in the Vancouver Stock Exchange, but he'd spent most of his life in private equity doing business. So he was there consulting for different firms and I met him and we kind of clicked and he saw something in me and he told me to hang on that we were going to work on something. So long story short, again, 2014, we set up International Coffee Farms, which was the first company. And we had recognized that we were in Panama. Panama was producing, not just subjectively, but the best coffee in the world, according to the points it was scoring and the sales price it was selling for. but only really 5 or 6 families in Panama were running their farms like a business and selling the coffee for that. The majority of them were still just subsistence farmers who had inherited the lands. And I think similar to a lot of farmers around the world, the kids didn't want to be in the small Boquete, where the farms are, is a small town, 20,000 people.
Okay.
Kids want to live in the city. The grandkids want to go to the US. And you end up with these farmers that are getting older. They haven't reinvested in the farm, so the trees are getting old, and they just don't have the motivation or the capital to keep up and do what the successful families are doing. So we put together a business model to raise private capital to basically rehab, if you're in real estate, but to rehab coffee farms instead of rehabbing traditional real estate. So the original business model was buying underperforming coffee farms that are in and around and next door to these really successful coffee farms.
Okay.
They have the same volcanic soil, same altitude, same access, same rainfall, same microclimates. They're just not being run properly.
Okay.
So we thought, well, this would be easy. We brought in Andres Lopez, who's been with us from day one. He's been in coffee forever. And we brought him our business model and said, if we're going to do this, do you think it could be successful? Then we consulted the lawyers and everybody else. And in January 2nd or 3rd, 2015, we bought our first farm, small little 3.3 hectare farm. A couple of months later, we bought another one. A few months later, we bought another one. Fast forward now, we've got 12 coffee farms in Panama, about 175 hectares. What's that? You guys do acres, 450?
Yeah, I don't know the formula off the top of my head, but I'll look for that later.
Something hectares. And we've built a complete seed to being, what's the word I'm looking for? Like the complete value chain is the word I'm looking for. So we have our own nursery, which means we're in control of the seeds that go into, not just buying the saplings, we're in control of the seeds that go into the sapling to control the nursery that gets planted on our farms, grow it, process it on site in our own mill, and then sell it as exportable green coffee.
Okay.
But that in a nutshell is coffee that started 2014, first farm 2015 up to now. In around 2016, we were talking to, for ourselves and for our clients, we were looking to diversify. And David had the idea that cacao or cocoa, as you guys would say, chocolate, had a lot of similarities with coffee, only it was less advanced than specialty coffee. So that's one of the keys. Like we're not in the commercial coffee business, and we wouldn't want to be in the commercial coffee business. That's just volume, right? And
that's
the price you see on the stock exchange when you're looking at it and it's manipulated and it's not the business we want to be in. So coffee took a leaf out of wine's book 10, 15 years ago and created like a grading system. So if you cup and grade the coffee and you score more than 80 points out of 100, you qualify to be specialty coffee. And once you do, you're going to sell for X amount of dollars above the C rate.
Okay.
If you get 81, and if you're talking to another coffee, if you're talking to a roaster in Japan, there's an agreed that an 81 point pack of Mara is worth this much, más o menos, an 86.96. So it's like your scores on your wine versus your two-book chuck, your Chateau Margaux versus your two-book chuck.
Sure. The boxed wine versus the $500 Merlot or whatever.
Exactly. So we then ventured into cacao. We wanted to diversify geographically as well. So we went into Belize, and we have now 5 cacao farms and the same nursery, post-harvest processing facility, chocolate factory and everything that's there in Belize. And then last year, we made a little bit of a switch where we bought our first cacao farm here in Panama. So we just acquired, it's a big 132-hectare cacao farm. We made the decision, it was happening during the pandemic, and that may have influenced part of it, that we couldn't travel as much as we wanted to Belize during the pandemic for obvious reasons. And most of our executive team is here. Panama also has a lot of benefits that Belize is amazing for growing cacao. But there are issues with central banking, costs of getting stuff imported, the recruitment pool, population access. Whereas Panama, because of the Panama Canal and the banking system, the service industry that has grown around it, and the dollarized economy and the fact that we're all here, it made sense to do this next farm.
Okay.
So as we stand today, we've got 18 farms altogether between coffee and cacao and
coffee
factories, coffee and chocolate shop. 100 and something employees, I think, now at this stage. And all started out of a little idea back in 2000.
Wow, that's some pretty impressive growth. So now, Darren, you and I were talking a little bit off camera, and I'm sure, you know, myself and many other investors, obviously we want to put in money into whatever, a coffee farm, a syndication, real estate, you know, whatever. And yes, we want to make our money grow and get a good return and hopefully passive income. But you and your company have kind of taken that one step farther as far as, you know, really helping the, you know, people of Panama, people of Belize, the farmers, not just, you know, hey, sell us your coffee, but really kind of giving them, you know, I think you mentioned housing and additional opportunities, clean water. You know, can you speak to a little about the social impact, so to speak?
Yeah, so that's something that has taken on a way bigger importance than we probably thought it would back in 2014. When we were acquiring the farms, it's a little bit of a misconception of some people. Some people think that we're buying the farms off the native Indians and kind of kicking them off their land. And it's not really like that. The Indians that live on the farm, the Nove Bugle Indians in this scenario that live on the coffee farms, they live and work on the farm, but the farm's owned by normally a fairly wealthy family, Panamanian family that maybe lives in Boquete or maybe lives in the city. Or okay. Even though, as I said earlier, they're retiring and they don't have the capital, they're not native Indians, right? So we would then buy the farm. And when we noticed how the native Indians were living, they were living on a dirt floor with just sheet iron, cooking over a fire, getting cataracts with a hole in the ground beside the river for a toilet.
Wow.
And we thought, well, if we're in a position to be able to do something to renovate these farms, make a decent return for ourselves and our investors, let's do something to bring up the lives of the workers. So we wanted it to be win-win-win.
Okay.
So it was a fine balance between here was these Westerners with their big size 12 stomping around and trying to improve their lives.
Like, yep.
You don't want to be buying them cell phones or TVs isn't doing them any favors, right? So luckily we had great input from Andres and the local team. And we just said, let's give them a clean place that they can be proud of, that's home, that's sanitary. So it's like poured concrete floor, concrete buildings, blocks in some cases, different materials, different places, but with running water, potable running water, flushing toilets, septic systems, proper bathrooms, gas stove so they can cook. Little things like a 6-inch mattress or a 3-inch mattress even in some places where before they would just sleep on a piece of wood.
Jeez.
And just giving them a place that when you can come home after a hard day of picking coffee or swinging a machete, whatever, you have a place you can rest, you have a place you can raise your family, you got a place where you can sit out of the rain and just socialize with your family. And it has become a way, how do I explain it? It's become a more important, if you've got passive investors living in one country, you've got us living, I'm in Panama City.
Mm-hmm.
Andres even isn't on the farm every single day of the week. The farmers are. If they think they're working for you, and they're working for the white man, and he's not getting well paid, and he's not getting looked after, how well is he really going to work?
Yeah.
Like most employees, they'll do the bare minimum.
Yep.
But now when we go to the farms, they say, our coffee, my farm, and they really take ownership in it. So they get the pride of doing it, and they'll go that extra mile. And then they get a financial contribution at the end of every year and a small cash bonus on top of we have a scholar program where we've got 89 kids now in school.
Oh, wow.
That you talk about forks in the road in some of these people's lives. Deborah Sewell, the wife of David, maybe 2016, maybe this happened, saw one of the young women, some of the Indian ladies, when they're having kids, they're only 14, 15, they're only kids themselves. And this girl was maybe 16, 17, and the kid looked like starting to go to school. And Deborah asked, like, oh, is she starting school? And the lady said, no, we can't afford it. Mm-hmm. Deborah said, well, how much is it? She goes, I don't know, but it doesn't matter. I can't afford it. So we found out it really only cost about $150 to $200 to buy them their uniform, buy them their equipment, their like school supplies and stuff like that, and get a bus to be able to bring them to school. That was it. So that $150 was the roadblock between them learning to read and write and have a formal education versus hanging around on the coffee farm and talk about, like I could say, a fork in the road.
Mm-hmm.
So we started the program. We started with the first 7 or 8 kids. We got told off by one of the grannies who came in and took her kid out and felt we were interfering. So we said,
geez.
Okay. Like, that's what I mean. You have to be careful with your imposing our way of doing things.
Right.
We kind of leaned back a little bit and we put Andres again, talked to him. We said, look, it's available for you and the workers and even the seasonal workers. And they again came to when they were ready.
Okay.
And now we've got 89 kids that are doing it. We've got kids that are graduating. And we've got a couple of the mothers who now, dad is getting paid every Friday. The kids are in school. Now, what do I want to do? And some of them are making crafts to sell in the markets, or they're now going back getting their own education.
Wow. So, yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned that even just from a, you know, simple mattress and running water. It's, I mean, here in the States, and I'm sure even right in Panama City, you just get used to that. And, you know, we always want the big iPhones or the newest, you know, 4K TV or whatever the case may be. It's like, you know, I think we just kind of need to humble ourselves to realize, you know, just some of the simple things are really necessary to live a good life.
Yeah. And we kind of haven't really spoken that much about it. We've told our investors in our annual reports mm-hmm. that you get about things that we do, the scholar program, but we never really kind of published it too much because it felt a little bit disingenuous, like, and we were respecting their privacy. Now that we're our first 4 to 5 years, we were straight up an investment company, raising money, buying assets, going mm-hmm. to investment trade shows, going about everything was just raising money, building the assets. Halfway then operating farms. Now we're in the coffee and chocolate business, going to coffee trade shows, meeting coffee roasters, meeting coffee buyers. Mm-hmm. And some of the very first questions they ask are either about the social side of things or the environmental side of things. Because they want to know that when they're buying their coffee, that the money that they're given is going towards someone who's looking after their people. So yep. Now we're getting a little bit more. All if you go on the coffee websites, the names of all the people that are on the farms are listed on the websites, just photos of the kids going to school and getting a little bit more interactive with it, because that's what the end consumer wants to see nowadays.
Yeah. Especially with environmental, social, governmental, you know, scores, if you will, of even Wall Street and big banks, you know, from little companies to big companies. I think that's, you know, an important part that's, you know, I think all of us should probably look at. So
the very first question you used to get back in 2014 was, what's the IRR? Now the first questions are more about the kids and the social and the environmental and the structure. Yep. And then it comes to that later. So
exactly. So now we don't have to go down the rabbit holes of IRRs and all that stuff, but maybe taking a step back, Darren, and on a recent LinkedIn exchange, I probably had 5 people message me wanting to hear about coffee. They never knew you could invest in coffee. And after kind of getting the same questions, I was like, well, maybe I'll just do a podcast on this and share this with others. But taking a step back, and maybe we'll just focus on what you or what AgroNosotras started with. Why should investors look at coffee, or why should an investor diversify and have coffee in their portfolio, should I say?
So when you're... I would say 99% of our investors already have kind of the start of their real estate portfolio or the start of their investment mm-hmm. portfolio, whether you're bricks and mortar, whether you're your 401k, whatever you're doing, you kind of have most of it built by the time they want to add something like what we have. And the first question that comes up, or the first comment, is diversification. Mm-hmm. They want to diversify away from traditional real estate, away from their own backyard, away from their own country, and into food. So before you even dig into coffee and chocolate, a lot of people always need a place to live, and people always need food. Mm-hmm. Growing population, less and less arable land, raising temperatures, all these things point to the fact that investing in arable land and food obviously makes sense. When it comes down to the products, coffee made sense for us because we were already here. Panama was the perfect place to do it. But also we wanted to be in truly specialty products. Products okay. that... If you say, you might see a lot of marketing that says gourmet coffee or 100% Arabica. That's just a marketing term. But specialty coffee, as we teased on earlier, is coffee that's cupped and graded by the Specialty Coffee Association. There's 4,500 cube graders around the world. And it's one of the strictest qualifications to qualify as specialty coffee. And once you do, we've sold coffee just, when was it? Where are we now? In September, we sent containers of coffee to... They weren't full, but one container went to Amsterdam, one to Korea, one to Japan, and one to Taiwan. And okay. the coffee was $5, $6, and $7 a pound. The C market was $1.50. $5, $6, $7 a pound for the Kutwai Wash was kind of your standards coffees. The Pacamara Naturals went for $12 and $13 a pound. And some of the Geisha, which is only young for us, went for over $30 a pound.
Oh, wow.
And the people, that might sound crazy to a person that's looking at the... He's looking at his Bloomberg terminal and he sees a pile of coffee growing across the screen. And where does he get 31 from? And it's supply and demand. There's not much of it. And it's a quantifiable real score that's awarded. And the guy in Japan can cup and grade our coffee and we'll get more or less the same score.
Okay.
So we wanted to be in truly specialty products that would command a higher price to be able to deliver return. We wanted to be in products that were going to stand the test of time. So I'm pretty sure coffee and chocolate aren't going away.
Right.
The way we consume them may start to change, whether people consume more at home or things like that, but I think they're not going away anytime soon. They're pretty much recession proof. I think we saw during the pandemic, like nobody stopped drinking coffee, no one stopped for Starbucks. Maybe coffee maybe is more of a drug than the chocolate, but neither one of them are going anywhere. And it made sense, apart from all those reasons, it made sense in the region we were in. So when you talk about, if you're in real estate and you're in Minnesota and you're buying property in Minnesota, the rental income you can get is determined by what's going on in Minnesota, right?
Yep.
Dell moves in, Dell moves out, things like that. With agriculture, it's you grow it in the place where the conditions make sense. And then you sell it anywhere.
Sure.
So our coffee that we sent to those four countries I mentioned earlier, this next harvest, depending on the auctions, may go to the US, Dubai, and South Africa. You don't know. Okay. So the growing conditions in Panama and Belize are perfect for growing coffee and chocolate and cacao. And then we were already located here. And then all the rest of the points, I said, just made sense.
Okay. So... All right. And then I think, and this is actually on Keith Weinhold's podcast I heard, I don't know how many years ago at this point, is coffee still the second most traded commodity worldwide, or has that changed?
After oil.
After oil. Okay. Maybe it went to number one.
Numbers out there now with, like say with chocolate, some people will call it a 400 billion and some call it 50. Depends if you're calling it all the way to the chocolate bar or just the cacao bean. But
oh, gotcha.
They're two multi-billion dollar industries.
Okay, good to know.
It's an interesting comment you made earlier that a lot of people just don't think that they can invest in coffee and chocolate.
Right.
And that was one of the reasons David created the business model the way he did, because the top 1% have always been investing in hardwoods, these products, wine, things like that. But it was never really accessible unless you were in that group.
And right.
It used to cost you millions of dollars to get in. So David always very consciously from the start structured our opportunities that the entry level was low enough for the average guy and girl on Main Street to be able to get started, try it out. If you like it, add more.
Right.
A huge, big barrier to entry.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. Now, Darren, and kind of goes into our next point, like you mentioned, when my wife and I purchased a half acre parcel of a coffee farm in Panama, this was January 2020, of course, right before the pandemic. But we could actually get, you know, a deeded title section of an actual farm or plot of land in Panama. Soon after that, you actually migrated and the company migrated more to a syndication model, both on the coffee and cacao side. One, why did you make the change? And two, you know, what are like the pros and cons doing the syndication route versus here, John, here is your half acre parcel of a coffee farm.
Everything for the last time we're talking all sounds great, right? Everything's rosy. Life doesn't work like that.
Yeah, of course
doesn't
not.
Doesn't work like that. Living in Latin America doesn't work like that. So when we started out in 2014, we approached our lawyer, who's still our lawyer now, and he spoke to all the municipality and people, and we said, we're going to buy coffee farms that have one title. And we're going to split them up into individual deeded half acres of land, and we're going to deed them to people that don't live in Panama.
Okay.
Is this possible? Yes. How long will it take? Now, you're not talking to, you're not in the 52nd floor of a building in Vancouver or Miami. You're in a small little prefab in the back of David in Latin America, and these three or four little old ladies in there, and they're like 12 months. We said, okay, let's say 18 months.
Yeah.
Then couple of different things happened. I think, first of all, they didn't estimate, and maybe we didn't estimate, the volume of parcels that we would sell.
Mm-hmm.
Other companies in the country started doing similar operations to us. So now they were adding to the load.
Okay.
Then the government here did a couple of things. They decentralized the entities, but it wasn't set up. And that caused a delay. The pandemic caused a delay because the lockdowns here were pretty severe.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up with this big backlog where you still haven't got your deed yet, right?
Yeah, no, that's correct. I know Panama is a little different than the U.S., where if you do the sale, I'm not a lawyer, I can't remember the term, but if you get the bill of sale, it's like or very similar to the deed again in the U.S., so it's
if you
buy formality, I guess.
Yeah, you buy a traditional house here, you transfer the deed, it's no problem, it's all done. We have to create individual deeds for each of these parcels. So we're taking one farm and asking them to create 100 deeds.
Okay.
They won't do it until the full farm is completely sold because they need the name of all the people that are in it. So that in itself might take sometimes maybe a year just to sell out the farm, depending on the size. Then they were just so overloaded and slow that it just kept getting delayed.
Mm-hmm.
So as around the time of the pandemic, I think you got into the last farm that we offered the deeds with.
Correct, yep.
One other thing, there was some issues and some requirements that were coming from Uncle Sam wanting to know where all you guys have all your assets.
Oh, yeah, yep, good old Uncle Sam.
So Panama still had bearer shares not too long ago, and there's a lot of pressure on your government wanted to know where all you guys had your money here in Panama. And Panama got real confused here with, if you buy something in your IRA and it's, let's say you're with Equity Trust and it's Equity Trust FBO Darren Doyle,
yep,
is how it would appear. Then Panama were like, well, we can only have one name. So is it Equity Trust or is it Darren Doyle? We said, yep, no, it's FBO. And they were like, couldn't get it.
Yeah.
So we actually had to swap about 50 or 60 of our clients out of traditional self-directed IRAs into EQRPs with Damien Lupo to be able to complete the deeding process, but which cost a few quid. But then we stopped accepting IRA funds because we just said, you know what? We're not sure. We're not comfortable accepting your money. And I don't want to turn around to in a year and a half and 2 years and say, I can't deed your parcel in the way that's going to meet your IRS requirements.
Right.
Well, now we've got about 30% of our investors used to invest using their IRA. And I think it's the perfect vehicle for something like this because it takes time to get a slow build up. You can't normally access it for different things. It's a perfect fit to use your IRA funds for this type of opportunity.
Right.
Now we have to say no to about 30% of them. Add that to the backlog. When we're doing a SWOT analysis, and you got to be honest with yourself and look yourself in the mirror and say, what's working and what's not? And what's not working as well as you can. And the most frustrating thing about the deeds, it was, we cannot impact it. So if the staff are not working as well as possible, we can impact it. We can hire new people. We can bring in new training. We can do whatever. We couldn't impact the speed the deeds were coming out. So we just couldn't, in good conscience, keep adding to that backlog until we delivered on everything that we had delivered. So around that time, we had done another couple of opportunities with a business partner of ours in Belize that were private placements. And David was very familiar with them, but they were new to me. And the clients loved them. And it actually had way more transparency because in the deeded model, you paid 15,000, 18,000. You didn't really have a full breakdown of the sources and uses of funds of the entire entity or the entire business. With a private placement, you get a full, way more detailed pro forma and you get a full sources and uses of funds. If it's a $3 million raise, X amount is going towards this from accounting to land purchase to everything.
Okay.
So we said, look, let's try it. And it went over really well. And we're on now our third or fourth private placement now.
Okay.
The very first one, we did it as a 506C so that we could advertise because we weren't sure. Our whole list of clients and database was all based on deeded land. And we thought, didn't even know if they wanted or if they were qualified.
Mm-hmm.
And then we found out that we were actually excluding a load of our investors that because they weren't accredited, but they were sophisticated enough and wanted to get started, they were the exact people that we'd structured our opportunities for at the beginning that could get in but weren't millionaires. So now we switched to it with the 506B where you're allowed to take up to 35 non-accredited investors. So you have to have some experience. I have to be able to talk to you and be comfortable that you're able to, that you can afford it, first of all. Some people don't think when you ask them, like, how much money do you have and can you really afford it? But that's part of the questions. And that you can analyze and assess the risk and the return and make a decision based on that. So you don't have to be accredited, but you do have to have some experience either with your own portfolio, no matter how big or small, but that comes across in the conversation.
Sure. Yeah. And for any of my listeners, and I'll put a link to this in the show notes as well. If the hearing this accredited, non-accredited, 506C, 506B, all these other terms are a little, you know, above your head. I did do a recent interview with Mauricio end of 2022, as far as from a legal standpoint, what all those mean, who can invest in where, and what you have to meet for the threshold for becoming an accredited investor. Now, Darren, in obviously, we want to keep the SEC off both our backs and talk, you know, in vague terms, shall we say. But since this is a, you know, 506B opportunity, you have mentioned, you know, this is a good fit for, you know, self-directed retirement accounts, for instance, whether that's Damian Lupo's or, you know, other companies that I've used. What is kind of like, you know, the entry level for either the coffee or cacao when, you know, under typical scenarios, when do people start seeing returns and what kind of returns, you know, obviously agriculture is risky, but everything, you know, sun shining, unicorns are flying everywhere. What kind of returns and timeline are we looking at?
All right. So we can talk, as I said, most of anyone that's interested, we'll have a quick conversation and we can send you the full set of PPM docs and you can see it here pro forma where you can see exactly what the returns are going to be and what that makes sense to you.
Sure.
As regards to what we can talk about now, we've always structured our opportunities with an entry level of 20 to 30,000. So that
okay.
people come in and kind of get their foot in the water. And most private placements have $100,000 entry level. But for us, that's a little bit off-putting, I think, for some people that are doing their first
yeah.
offshore investments. They've got most people, one of the most common phrases I hear is get my toe wet, start with a couple, come down and see us, do a tour, see how we perform, add more. And year by year, you can add smaller increments. So,
sure.
The two opportunities that we have at the moment, we have a coffee farm and a cacao farm. When the returns start depends on the growth or the production of the farms. So
okay.
if you take a, and this is one of the big things that if you're investing in agriculture, it has all the benefits of diversification and all these things that we talked about. But at the end of the day, it's nature. So
yep.
when we take coffee, we talked earlier about building the nursery. You take a coffee seed, you put it in the bag of soil and you grow your nursery for about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
When the sapling is strong enough, then you put the sapling into the ground. And depending on the varietal, it can be 3, 4, 5, or 6 years until that coffee starts to give you cherries.
Okay.
And in those coffee cherries are the coffee beans. And when you sell those coffee beans, that's when you have the revenue and you have the returns.
Sure.
So most of them will have at least 3 years of no cash flow. We try and plant a mixture of varietals that has obviously the varietals that we want to go to market with, but so that if you plant just geisha and it's a 7 year timeline until cash flow, that's not ideal for the investors either. So
sure.
basically it's all determined by the coffee trees, the varietal trees that we plant, when they're going to reach production. So it's going to take between 3, 4, and 5 years for those trees. Once those trees start to produce, like everything in life, it's a C curve. So you get more and better coffee, more and better coffee for about 10 years, 12 years. Then it starts to level out.
Okay.
And then it starts to drop off to the other side. And you start to get less coffee, slightly lower grade coffee. Mm. It's costing you more money to maintain the trees because they're getting old. And there's a point here where the inputs start to exceed the outputs and it's time to renovate the trees.
Okay.
The older farmers that we talked about have let that go all the way down here to the bottom and they can't afford now to cut everything down and start from scratch.
Okay.
So when you get a tour down the top, way before it starts to dip, we create a new nursery and we plant. Our farms are planted in a way that there's space in between the rows to be able to plant the new baby saplings. And then when they grow and they're just starting to produce, then we take down the older trees and then that whole area is renovated. And you do that bit by bit throughout the farm. So that the farm is constantly producing. So
okay.
once you get past this first initial, could be 3, 4 years, depending on the opportunity, once you get to production, it'll stay producing in perpetuity.
Oh, okay.
And because of the way we farm, you can plant 6,000 coffee trees in a hectare, but eventually that area, I might go too far down a rabbit hole on this, but you've 6,000 trees competing for all the same nutrients, blocking out the shade, creating a breeding ground for moisture, all these things. And they think that if they plant more trees, they'll get more coffee, but it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So we plant 3,333 trees, which is difficult for someone from Dublin to say, in a hectare. And that means that the land never has to be rested.
Okay.
Because you can rotate them in that process that we talked about, and then it can go. That's why we're happy calling it a legacy investment.
Gotcha.
In cacao, it all works the exact same, except it's 25 years.
25, okay.
Versus 12.
Gotcha. Okay.
Was there another question in there that I missed? Or was the
No, we actually covered all of them. So yeah, like you said, obviously more of a legacy investment. And if you have a Roth IRA that, hey, it's 10, 15, 30 years for retirement, this is kind of more ideal investment. If you're looking for something to get a return within a year, this is not the not the one to go for.
Exactly. So. And I've had that conversation with, there's one story, I was talking to two young guys and they just responded to the email, said, send me the contract, I want to buy a parcel. And I said, well, let's have a conversation first. And yeah, in the conversation, I was talking to them and they sounded pretty young. There was two guys that were buying it together. And I think at the time it was maybe 15,000. And I asked them like the source of funds and they said, well, we're going 50-50. And I said, okay, do you mind me asking, after you buy the parcel, how much money do you have left? And one guy didn't like the question, but the other guy said, oh, we get paid next week.
Oh, boy.
That was all they had. So that's an extreme. But we sure do talk to a lot of people. And we have to say, look, is your portfolio structured in a way, either that from your JOB or from your portfolio, that you do not need a return on this for the first 3 or 4 or 5 years? And even then, in the first couple of years when it starts producing, it's small volume. So really, don't expect to live off it for the first 8 or 9 years. But once it cash flows and start reaching those high double-digit returns, it keeps going in perpetuity. And a lot of people, when I was doing this at the start, I was 30, didn't really know as much, obviously didn't know as much as David. But all the people we were talking to, David's 6'3", silver-haired, pinstripe suit, how he's going to look. And no matter who I was, all our clients looked like him. They were all his demographic. Very few women, no young people. And no matter who I was talking to, they would just gravitate towards David.
Sure.
Now, we have such, and for people at that age, they were like, well, I can't afford to wait this much time, or else I'll buy it for my kids.
For my kids.
Now, I've got clients as young as 20 and as old as 95.
Wow.
the guys that are in their 20s and even in their 30s, getting started on something like this now, like in 10, 15 years' time, they're still only in their 40s.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing. It's a good switch that people are starting to pay attention earlier and not waiting until they're in their 60s to start to plan for stuff like this.
Yeah, no, definitely makes sense. And yeah, like we're talking before, you know, I got a almost 16-month-old son right now, and definitely hoping to have this as a legacy for him. And down the line, hopefully he invests in syndications and lifetime legacy investments as well.
Yeah, well, like the idea is that in like fast forward 15 years time, and he's talking to my son and they're coming down here to tour the farms, and that's the whole point, right? We're in it for the same reasons as you guys.
Exactly. So, well, as we're getting close to wrapping up here, Darren, and again, I want to thank you for your time joining me and my listeners. Now, as we're, you know, getting into 2023, I hope the, you know, pandemic is behind us and the world isn't quite going to hell in a handbasket or anything, but any upcoming projects, tours, or additional farms that you and Agro Nosotros are looking for in 2023?
2023, I think we're pretty much set for farms, because we have another, the 132 hectare farm that we talked about, we split it into two because trying to wrap your arms around and plant and graft and everything 132 hectares in one planting cycle, it was too much.
Okay.
So we did 61.5 hectares. That's probably going to be fully funded by the time this airs, but the second one will be live. So
okay,
that'll be available for most of 2023.
Okay.
And the coffee farm we just acquired. So that at the time now we're about maybe 15 or 20% funded. So again, that'll be available for most of the year. So I think are we gonna make a coffee download available that's more of a why coffee.
I'll have a link to that in the show notes, but on my Wealth and Freedom Nexus website, on the downloads page, you can find a why coffee PDF you can download free of charge, learn some more about it, and you know, see if this investment is right for you.
Yeah, so once you download it, then we'll send you a couple of information emails, and I will not call you. I haven't made a cold call in 8 years. I don't plan on starting now. But we will send you some informative emails. You respond whenever you're ready, ask some questions, and I can send you the details on these deals once we've had a chance to talk.
Okay.
What we do have coming up now, thankfully, post-COVID, is our tours are back.
Nice.
Before the pandemic, we were doing coffee farm tours and cacao farm tours every couple of months. And it was game changer for us. Instead of going to an investment conference in the US and being there beside 600 other boots and paying a fortune and trying to compete for everyone's time.
Yeah.
We got a captive audience to come down here. And instead of just pro formas and spreadsheets, walk the farms, meet the team, drink the coffee, eat the chocolate, see the housing. And it's open kimono. All our team is there. You can talk to everybody over coffee, over beers, glass of wine in the evening time. And I haven't had a tour yet that there hasn't been some existing investors on board as well. So
okay,
if you're a newbie and you're sitting down, you can get to chat with someone who might be yourself who's been on board for 3 years, and they'll be able to tell you what's it really been like.
Sure.
So delighted to say the tours are back. We have one March 3rd to 6th, which I think will be full by the time this airs.
Okay.
Another one in May. Once that's full, we will announce two more tours at least, I'd say, throughout this year. So okay. Anyone that goes to the Agronaut Ultra website, or once they get onto the emails, they'll be able to find out the tour dates. So that's, for me, the best due diligence you can ever do is come down here, see if you like. When you were saying earlier, why should people invest in coffee or cacao? There's way more to it than just that. You got to be comfortable in the country that you're investing in, which is Panama. You got to be comfortable in the people that are actually running the operation with us. And the best way is to do that is come on down.
Yep. No, it makes sense. So, all right. Yeah. And by the time this airs, and like you already said, the March one will probably come and gone and fully subscribe, but I'll make sure that having the show notes at the May tour, and then hopefully the ones later on, depending on when people are listening to this, that they can maybe do a deep dive. And hey, if you're in the tundra like me, you know, sometimes maybe going to a tropical Caribbean area in the middle of winter might not be a bad idea anyways.
Yeah, not a bad excuse, right?
Exactly. So, all right. Well, I appreciate your time, Darren. I enjoyed our time together. And again, I'll have all the contact information, the download links in the show notes. With that, thanks again, and enjoy the rest of your day in Panama City.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure. See you soon.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to share, rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. For more updates, check out www.wealthandfreedomnexus.com. Remember, nothing on this show should be considered tax, legal, investment, or professional advice. This show is produced solely for educational and informational purposes. Please consult an appropriate and licensed tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for specific advice for your situation. For distribution or publication rights or media interviews, please contact the host.